Future editing, Mark here. Upon coming to this audio, we have discovered that my audio has a weird effect on it that was caused by an error in the recording. Everything else is great and fine, and we have a lot of fun conversations like in this episode, but just to warn you at the top that my audio is a bit funky. We hope that you enjoy it anyway, and we apologize for this.
I'll stop talking about Nintendo now, and we can do our episode.
I'm catching up on like years of GameCube games and being like,
you know how you were like with like Fallout Boy, where you're like, have you heard of this game called Mario Kart Double Dash?
Have you heard of Fallout Boy?
And you're like, yes.
But like, I like how that wasn't even like a thing that I said to you, but yeah. Still, you know about it. Like, it's spread throughout like all the friends.
Oh, it was iconic.
Hi, I'm Mark.
Hi, I'm Sophie.
And this is You Know What I Like, where we sit down each month and flail about something that we are unhealthily obsessed with. You know what I like.
And you know what I like. Little Women! Mr. S keeps calling them miniature maidens.
Yeah. Teeny tiny ladies.
Little Women is a novel by Louisa May Alcott, published in two volumes in 1868 and 1869. It is loosely based on her own childhood with her three sisters and follows the March family as sisters Meg, Jo, Beth and Amy grow from girlhood into women. The first volumes, Little Women and Good Wives, are usually bound together as one and were later followed by sequels Little Men and Jo's Boys. Something about the book's timeless quality has caused people to return to the story time and time again, along with adaptations on stage, film, television, opera, and more. That's all the intro I did.
There's an opera?
There's an opera!
Okay. I believe
and it. And musicals.
I can believe it. Like, I feel like it's quite like a... I mean, like, we can get into it, but it's quite a... Like, it's got a good framing of a story. Sophie, what's your, like, experience with Little Women?
I have been reading Little Women since I myself was a little woman slash a small child.
A teeny tiny lady.
A miniature maiden of a woman.
Yes.
I have my granny's copy of Little Women. I also have my mum's copy of Little Women. Maybe they want them back, but they're not getting them back. They're mine now.
Never had them.
You know, sometimes you're just like, I own these things. And I, like, after a while, I was like, did they want them back? But yeah, I read them a lot as a child. I really liked them when I was a kid. I also really like the 90s movie. That was a movie which I also watched a lot when I was a little kid. And then also, crucially, absolutely adored the 2019 film as well. So, like, I like him.
You like them? All of them?
Have done for all a while. How about you?
So my experience is like a lot shorter than yours in that my first time consuming it was the 2019 film. But like obviously I was like aware of it in like a general cultural sense, but I didn't know like anything about it other than the Friends episode where Joey reads the book.
Beth dies.
Beth dies?
Joey's asking if you've just ruined the first book he's ever loved that didn't star Jack Nicholson.
No. She doesn't die.
So, like, I knew the big spoilers of the story just from the Friends episode. I feel like it didn't... Like, it's the kind of story that I think if it's told right, it doesn't matter that you might know some plot points. Because it's got, like, enough of a depth to it that it doesn't matter. And then I really, like, enjoyed the film. Like, I loved the film. It got robbed of all the awards.
100% robbed.
Then I tried to read the book as prep for this episode. And I got, like, almost halfway through. I was struggling a bit. Like, I could see the parts, like, see the beats from the film that, like, I enjoyed. And I enjoyed getting the more depth that you get from a book. But then I sent you a message being like, I'm nearing the end of part one and I'm struggling slightly, mostly due to the over-the-top moralizing and slightly saccharine descriptions. Should I push through or does it stay consistent? And then you said, yeah, it's the same the whole way through. And so I stopped.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant when I said that the reading experience is slightly different reading it as an adult to a kid, because like, speaking for myself, I definitely, like, I reread books a lot when I was a kid, so I reread all of the Little Women books quite a lot when I was little, and then I went through like a big gap of not having reread them in ages, and then I read them maybe 2 or 3 years ago now. I did like a let's reread them, and it did strike me how there was much more of a every plot point message is a bit like episodic in that way, and they all round off.
Yes, like every chapter is like a lesson,
which I guess is also partly a little bit more to do with the time that it was written. That was more of a thing that you would have. It was definitely something that I hadn't registered quite as much when I was a kid. And yeah,
do you think that you picked up the lessons when you were a kid at all?
I mean, based on how I live my life, probably not.
Okay. Like, that was one of the problems that I had with the moralizing, though. So, like, I feel like I could have got past the fact that it was a bit, like, episodic. But it was that I didn't agree with a lot of the morals that were being said.
Yeah.
So, like, my big issue with, like, a lot of the morals are that the lesson seems to be that the only way to be, like, a moral person is to give away all of your things, not have anything, be poor, be righteous. And, like, that is the only way to be a good person.
It's rooted in a very, obviously it's rooted in a very Christian religious lens, because mm-hmm. that is obviously, you know, what influenced a lot of people. And then also the particular branch of Christianity, which the March family itself is practicing. And it is kind of based on that Christian charity idea of giving away your things to others and stuff, which is a very worthy thing to do.
Yes.
I think some of the times when, especially as a modern reader, it sometimes feels a bit excessive, especially like Meg goes to the ball and wears a fancy dress and people do makeup on her, and then that's like shocking, terrible, she's betrayed herself and blah, blah, blah. And there are aspects of it which just feel a little bit extreme at this stage. You're like, you can be a good person, you don't have to give up everything you own.
If the girls like ever show that they want to have a thing for themselves, then by the end of the chapter, they're being told that that was hubris, and that, like, you don't get to have, like, independence of being, like, a separate human being from the family unit.
Which is, again, another thing that is sort of also an aspect of the time it is written in, you know, like the rights that women had at the time, being able to pursue individualism as a woman in that time is not necessarily something that you're really able to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Little Women, reading it as a modern reader, it's very easy to see these messages as overly moralizing and overly constricting to what these girls are allowed to experience and be, what they're shamed feeling and what is allowed to feel and encouraged to feel and that sort of thing. But also at the same time, I would like to pay homage to the fact that actually for the time it is written in, there were also some very slightly empowering messages of what women can do as well at the same thing. So it's that tricky thing where you look at something that's from a while ago and you go, oh yeah, like some of these things don't hold up and feel a bit uncomfortable as a modern reader, but also like let's pay dues to like what is actually being said in the time it's being said in. Yeah, you know, it's like a tricky one where it's like I actually really love this book series. I've grown up with it. If you asked me as a kid, it probably would have been one of my favorites. Do I always agree with all these moral lessons that are being given? No, especially because I'm not a Christian, so a lot of the things to do with like their faith and stuff just stuff that doesn't really resonate with me. But I think that's one of the ways that it works well as something that's adapted, because film adaptations can take the characters and the plot and the stuff like that, and at least the film adaptations I have seen go slightly less heavy on the continual morals, and what you really get is what the core of the story is, which is like the family, the relationships like between them and like that sort of side of it, more so than maybe the bits that feel a little bit more like miniature sermons.
Mm-hmm, yeah, like in the 2019 film, like it does have a lot of those great moments of you see the family unit as like a positive feature rather than like a restrictive feature, in that there is that appeal and the reason why people keep going back to it as like an ideal of just like the family is the place where like you feel safe, where you have like all the people that you care about. So the film does keep a lot of those details of like when Joe is like annoyed at Amy for burning her manuscript, famously, and then tries to go out ice skating on the lake with Laurie, and then like Amy tries to follow them, and then like ends up falling through the ice. And then like you have this scene afterwards of Joe being like entirely repentant about it.
When I get in a passion, I get so savage. I could hurt anyone, and I'd enjoy it.
You remind me of myself.
But you're never angry.
I'm angry nearly every day of my life. There are some natures too noble to curb and too lofty to bend.
That's the kind of detail where, like, if you have siblings, then you've had that kind of moment of you're annoyed at them for something or another. But, like, when it comes down to it, like, you do really care about your family.
Yeah, that's one thing I particularly loved about the 2019 film. It felt very authentically like siblings. You could really feel the bonds between all of the girls in all of the different complex ways that, especially when you have more than one child, there's four girls, there will be bonds between all of them in differing ways. There were a lot of smaller moments, a lot of which were quite visual, which were about, like, girls interacting as siblings so that you really felt that strong thing. Whereas I think sometimes it's easier to lean into Joe and Beth's connection and Meg and Amy's connection, whereas the 2019 film really also showed you the ways that, like, maybe Amy and Joe don't get on because Amy and Joe are actually really similar. Maybe Meg and Beth have these things going on between, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think sometimes there's a tendency for adaptations to fall back on, I don't know, less of a cohesive whole.
The way that you can tell if the writing is strong in a piece of media where there are a bunch of different characters is that you can imagine how they would each, like, interact in all the combinations, and they each have a different dynamic. So that, like, in this film, like, you can, like, as you said, like, imagine how each pairing, like, of the sisters would have a conversation.
Yeah, I think that also is aided by the new structure in the 2019 film, because flashing back and forth allows you to parallel moments and thereby be able to communicate things to the audience without having to sit down and have a character say something to communicate it. You know, like how you go from Joe reacting to Beth's death and losing that sister, and then you move into Meg's marriage because Joe also feels like she's losing another sister through the marriage. And it's something that you don't have to have that character verbalize, "I feel like I'm losing you." Whereas I love the 90s film dearly, but occasionally, like, Meg gets married and then she sort of just, like, doesn't really pop up very much again. And, like, that sort of thing, like, you get chronologically, like, the same things might be being felt by Joe. She'll still feel like she's losing that thing, but it's slightly less communicated to you. I don't know. I do love the 90s film. I'm not shitting on it.
Okay. What I did enjoy about the new film, and I'm not sure if this is in the book or not, but the fact that it makes an effort to show that because they are four very different people, that all of them make very different choices. But the film makes a point of showing that all of these different women are valid women, in quotes. That, like, none of their choices, like, makes them bad people. Like, the conversation, like, around Meg getting married.
Let's just run away together.
I want to get married.
Why?
Because I love him.
You will be bored of him in 2 years, and we will be interesting forever.
Just because my dreams are different than yours doesn't mean they're unimportant. I want a home and a family, and I'm willing to work and struggle, but I want to do it with John.
Yeah, I think you can tell, especially in interviews with the cast, especially in interviews with Emma Watson, who played Meg, you can tell that that's something that they were really focused on when making the 2019 version. Like, where the 90s might have gone out and been like, educating women is good. This one is a bit more like, you're valid, you know, you can pick your life past. It's not like marriage and babies and family making is inherently a bad anti-feminist thing to do. It's all about choice, and it's all about having the freedom to choose, which, again, I also think works well because all of the sisters get a little bit more. Joe is the main character of Little Women. If you were to be like, who's the main character, it would be Joe. I think the 2019 film gave, like, a little bit extra space for some of the other sisters to just have a little bit more, like, focus on them. Especially, I feel like what they did with Amy in this one was really good, because I feel like they made Amy much more of, like, a fleshed out character. Whereas, again, just to compare it to the 90s film, I don't feel like you're given a huge amount of time with Amy's plotline to adjust to A, her being an adult now, and B, the relationship with Laurie. It feels a bit jarring in that film, or at least it does to me. Whereas I think in the 2019 film, it doesn't feel quite as jarring to suddenly go from, like, small child played by Kirsten Dunst, now getting it on with grown adult man. I don't know. It's like, it's just like, there's like how there's a scene where when Beth has scarlet fever for the first time and they're taking Amy away to go stay with her Aunt March, and she's played by Kirsten Dunst, who is an actual child, who is saying to the grown-ass adult of Laurie, will you kiss me before I die? And you're like, you're a child, it's weird.
No, okay, bye. I feel like, and I'm not sure, because like I don't know if there is a like a fandom for this book.
Yes, there is.
Okay, I'm sure
there very much is. There are a lot of very strong opinions online.
I feel like Amy would be the most controversial character.
Amy is a very controversial character.
Because like even in, because like in the book, like I only read the point like at which she is the youngest child, so she is the whiniest one. But I feel like in the film they did a good job at managing the fact that she is like, she's not just copying Joe. That like, just because she also wants to marry Laurie doesn't mean that she is trying to be Joe or to steal from Joe.
Yeah, I feel there is a lot of vitriol towards Amy as a character. That's one of my favourite things about the 2019 film, is that they gave you time and space to, and also Florence Pugh's performance of Amy. Like, in the 2019 film, it reads much more to me that Amy and Joe clash because they are similar people. Their motivations might not always be coming from the same place, but they are similar, and that's why they have conflict. Amy doesn't want Laurie because Joe wanted Laurie. Amy wanted Laurie regardless of how, of what Joe's role was in it. It's just that it took, Laurie and Joe were so wrapped up in each other that it never really occurred to him that that could be a thing. And then it's only later after X, Y, and Z. And they address that in the scene where he, like, sort of...
Don't marry him.
Why?
You know why.
No.
Yes.
No, Laurie.
What?
You're being mean. What? Stop it. Stop it. I have been second to Joe my whole life in everything, and I will not be the person you settle for just because you cannot have her. I won't, not when I've spent my entire life loving you.
And I like that because I think Amy is a, because Amy does stuff like she burns the manuscript and blah, blah, blah.
That is horrible, horrible, Amy.
It's horrible, but also I do feel like sometimes, especially if you are in Little Women online circles, mm-hmm. there is a lot of very strong vitriol that gets put towards a child.
I know, like, it's like, as a child, it's like an understandable thing to do and not think through the consequences and how hurtful it is.
But again, another thing I like about the 2019 one is that she knows how horrible it is, but it's the only way to elicit a response. And sometimes when you care for someone, especially in the way that sisters care for each other, and especially like youngest, having been the youngest child, like often you get ignored and not included in things. And the character says, I did it because I wanted to hurt you. And sometimes you don't think about what happens after you've done the hurt. You just think about, this person never pays attention to me, and I'm so frustrated that they never take my feelings into account, and I want to hurt them like they've hurt me. And yeah, it's not a good thing to do, but also it is something that kids do, because kids don't always think about like repercussions. They just think cause and effect. Again, I like that time was taken to like show the complexities of that. I think when you focus on like the messiness of sibling relationships, you can acknowledge that like someone's done a terrible thing that's going to be very hard for that other person to forgive, but also maybe we as adults don't have to talk about how disgusting and horrible a child is. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, it's fair. So we've touched on it. I mean, like, are you done or with these books?
The thing is if you actually want to sit me down, I can talk you through the 90s adaptation mm-hmm. and the 2019 adaptation, okay. All the things I like that they adapted and all the things I don't like that they adapted. I would just like to go on record as saying that personally, I'm in the Jo March is a lesbian camp. I don't hugely care for the way that the professor is done in the 90s film. I kind of liked that he wasn't so much in it. I like the professor, but I also don't really care for the romance.
I feel like I cut that bit out of my memory.
Yeah, because that they made it much less of a thing in the 2019 film. And so I'm just saying that I know that it wasn't a thing that would have been in any way possible when it was being written. But personally, I quite like the idea of Jo March being a lesbian.
Okay, yeah.
I just wanted to go on record with it.
Fair. Okay. Like, is that your, like, only headcanon for this book?
Well, I'm like, sometimes I'm like, is Jo March a lesbian? And other times I'm like, is Jo March bisexual? I don't know. But I just feel like there's stuff there with that.
How do you feel about the fact that some people that I've seen think that Joe might be trans in some way, but like doesn't like have the words for it?
I'm also fine with that reading. I think that one of the things that draws a lot of people to Joe, aside from just the literary writing type angle, is the way in which she navigates this being uncomfortable with the roles that are put on her that are expected of her based on her gender. And you can read that in a lens whereby she is a lesbian or she's bisexual or something like that. You can read that in a lens whereby it's her actual gender identity that she is uncomfortable with and that sort of thing. Especially in the styling and stuff that's given in the 2019 film with the clothes sharing, like they share costumes across Laurie and Joe's wardrobes and that sort of thing. I think either of those are equally valid because it comes from this point of like Joe just, there is an element of uncomfortableness and of that sort of thing. I'm here for all of them.
Okay.
Anyway, would you like to move on to adaptations as a topic?
So we've talked about this in the context of comparing how the characters from this book appear in both in the book and the two films, and comparing those different versions of the characters. So we thought that we would have a conversation around the general sense of the adaptations of characters. Where do you want to start with this, Sophie?
I thought you had an area to discuss.
Okay.
I'm throwing the ball back to you.
Throw me under the bus.
I feel like I've done a lot of talking about my Little Women feels, and I feel like we should also have some enthusiastic discussions from you.
Okay, so when we agreed that we were going to do this episode, I was going to read the book because I knew that I loved the new film. And I was like, I'm going to read the book, I'm going to love the book. And then I was like, I don't love the book. I still need to contribute. So... I used my background in reading comics to tangent off in the sense of when you read a lot of comics and they have all of these parallel universes that have the same characters in different forms, that it kind of like invites the same kind of conversations around like what makes a good like version / adaptation of a character.
Yeah, especially because Little Women is something that's been adapted so many times. Like, if you go on the list of adaptations, it is huge. And I think in comparison to that, X-Men and stuff like that is an additional thing whereby even if you ignore all of the TV and film and blah adaptations just in comics, you've got so many different versions.
Yeah, when there is always like an adaptation from a book to a film, there are always conversations like around like, is this a good version of the character? Is this a bad version of the character? Some people like to frame it just about like, is it the exact same character from the book? Does the exact same things happen to them in the exact same order with the exact same conversations? And if it's not, then like it's a bad version of, like of that character, which is bullshit. As far as I'm concerned. Like,
this podcast has taken a stand.
I mean, like, how do you feel about that? Like, do you feel like it has to be, like, an exact copy of the character to be a good version of that character?
I mean, we've already established that I loved the 2019 version of Little Women because it took risks and it changed up how you tell the narrative. I like adaptations that retain a core and a sense and a heart of the thing. I don't mind if they have to alter plot points or condense things and stuff to get there. Yes, I would like it to still bear a resemblance to what it's trying to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
I just think if you're adapting things across mediums, you're gonna always have to make changes because you can otherwise it would just be someone sat there reading a book to you.
Like, I would agree with that, definitely. Just so I'll go into my, because like I will come back to that point. So like I've got my, in the context of comics specifically, I thought of three different like examples of things that happen in comics in the sense of like adapting a character. A lot of comics have like a what if style of a story. What if you began with this well-known story and then a different thing happened at the end? One of the examples that I thought of is a version of a character that shows off a believable extrapolation of a character's known personality and behaviours, but in a different circumstance.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So one of the examples that I thought of is one that you've read, actually.
Ooh.
It's Magic in What If Magic Number One.
Yes, 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 yes.
And so, like, if you don't know, Magic, like, is a character whose backstory, like, involves her being dragged to a hell dimension for her childhood. And then she develops magical powers and has, like, really bad trust issues, like, as you would expect.
Girl's got understandable trauma.
Yes.
And massively influences all of the actions she takes.
Yeah, like the fact that like she is at all functional is very impressive.
Yeah, she's doing a great job. Yeah.
But this comic shows what would have happened to her if she had met Doctor Strange after coming out of the Hell Dimension, getting that training in her abilities and like emotional support that she didn't get in the X-Men at all, because they're bad at feelings in the X-Men. And what works so well about this story is that you get to see a different version of her that gets much more of a happy ending. You get to see her, this character that like you might know, or like even like if you go like into this comic not really knowing much about her, like you get to see a version of the character that like it gives you like a good kind of ache, in terms of it's the same kind of ache that like you get when you hear Six the Musical for the first time, and you get that last song of they hypothesize about a world where they don't have these horrible lives.
Yeah, and then I cry.
Yeah, because like you're like, I get that they don't in the real world, and like in this context, the real world is the main timeline. So like you know that they don't always get this happy ending.
Yeah.
But you're like, I get to see this character that I love have some kind of a happy life. And the hope that they will get through all of this horrible trauma that they've been through. So the second like example that I thought of like an adaptation of a character is when, like as we've talked about in some respect, an entirely different character that has the same name as something from the like original source.
Okay.
So like it happens like a lot in comic book films where they will take like a famous name, and like if you've read the original source, then you're like, I'm expecting this thing. And then when you see the film, you're like, you are an entirely different person with the same name. Like, as much as I liked Yukio in Deadpool 2, that is a different character with the same name.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not always a bad thing. It's just, like, just goes against your expectations of what the character is going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how do you feel about the sense of do characters in, like, adaptations, if they have the same name, should they be the same character?
I guess it's slightly different for like superheroes, because if we were to watch Little Women and someone called Beth was in it, mm-hmm. and never died and was like a horrible selfish person for the whole film,
yes.
you'd be like, what is going on?
That's a good comparison, actually. Yeah.
So it's like that weird thing with like superhero movies where I think sometimes writers want someone to have a specific power, mm-hmm. so they find a superhero with the power, and then they're like, but I don't necessarily want this personality.
Mm-hmm.
So they just like take the little power, but they can't really separate the power from the name, because then everyone who watched it who was a superhero fan would be like, but that's this person, how have you da 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 da. So they're like, take it, and then they just take away the personality. I understand that narratively they might need to do that. I like am on the side of adaptations don't have to stick 100% to the source material, but also it kind of baffles me why you would take these things and then not use any of the original stuff.
Yes.
But again, I guess that's the difference as well, is that like an adaptation of Little Women is an adaptation of the plot of Little Women. A superhero movie is not often an adaptation of a particular run of comics. A lot of the time a superhero movie is a new story. They might have taken some elements for some comics, which I know they sometimes mm-hmm. do, but like they're not saying we're adapting this particular comic run, we're doing an X-Men film. So it's not a like-for-like comparison, because an adaptation of a thing versus a new story using characters that have previously existed.
Like I do fully like understand that in most contexts. The one that came to mind, like as you were saying that, was the X-Men film Days of Future Past. They've used the name of a very famous story that is centered around like three women, and they changed it to be based around three middle-aged white men instead. Like, I don't just want this to be like me complaining about details being different. Even though it bugs me. Rachel Summers is meant to be in that film, damn it. But she's
that,
not.
That is frustrating.
Yeah. But like it's when you see this, that something is coming out that is like an adaptation of a thing that not just that you know well, that
yeah.
you are aware of the plot beats in it that work.
Yeah.
And then you see that they don't use them.
Yeah.
And you feel, because like I want to like avoid the the comic book nerd frustration of like, oh, it's different. Actually, this doesn't happen in the comics.
Yes, but you can make changes that work better for the storytelling medium that you're using, but that still retain the beats and the necessary like emotive moments.
Yes.
Versus you make changes and it just kind of completely changes how it all is, and then those beats don't hit the same and mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, like one film that is coming out, like it's meant to have been coming out for like 3 years at this point, is the New Mutants film.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I am terrified that they are going to do it wrong. Because, like, that's a team that I really, really like. And the characters in it that I really, really like. So I'm trying, one, to go in with low expectations. But, like, I am, like, as you said, I'm expecting them to have made changes to who the characters are. But, like, I want it to feel like the New Mutants. I want it to feel like a group of teenagers muddling their way through, caught up in this traumatic story that is far bigger than they comprehend, but wanting to do good. And they're full of snark, and they're full of, like, pessimism and optimism in equal measures, and I want that to be retained in the New Mutants film. But I don't think it's going to be. This is, like, the one chance for these characters to make a mark in the public consciousness of these characters that I don't want it to be wasted.
I felt like that about the Mortal Engines film.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, well, number one, the Mortal Engines film was in development for so long. They changed the plot so much just to fit a very stereotypical Hollywood action movie plot beat. What I think made Mortal Engines an interesting tale was that there's a lot of Mortal Engines which explores like nuance. Neither side, there's like a conflict happening. Neither side is like particularly like better or worse than the other. There's like bad people on both sides. And then the film was just like, this guy's terrible. These guys are great. When I was watching it, I was like, maybe I should be pleased because a character that I really like got a lot more screen time. And I was like, is this enough to make up for it that this one really cool character got to be shown off more? And I was like, you know what? It's not enough.
Okay. So, to end on a positive note, that got more negative than I thought it was going to. There's a conversation to be had more generally around classic literature and works that get modernized. And we've talked about them like in the sense of this book. But I feel like there's a lot of conversation for that like around Shakespeare's works.
Okay.
And we've probably like touched on this in some parts already. But when you are like adapting Shakespeare, because of the language in it, is so very different to how we talk currently. A lot of the time, there are a lot of changes that are made. There is the version of Shakespeare that just like does the play word for word as it is in the script. So like I recently watched the version of Twelfth Night with Tamsin Gregg. They keep the original dialogue, but they modernize both the setting and the physicality of the actors so that even if you don't catch all of the words, that you can still understand more of the nuances. How do you feel about those two versions of like adapting Shakespeare?
I think it's a lot rarer to see Shakespeare adapted whereby everyone wears Elizabethan clothing and they play it completely straight with no interpretation whatsoever. I think that's a lot rarer than seeing stagings of Shakespeare whereby they have interpreted it slightly differently somehow. I think that's more common because I think Shakespeare lends itself so easily to being adapted in many forms, whether that is, I mean, mainstream cinema, let's compare. What do you enjoy most? Baz Luhrmann's interpretation of Romeo and Juliet, whereby we're set in more contemporary times and it gives context to a lot of the stuff that's happening, or that really shit Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet they did where everyone looked like they were out of Gossip Girl and they were all wearing Verona-style clothing. And to be quite frankly, it's the most boring thing I've ever watched in my bloody life. It was so dull. Shakespeare stage performances that often get touted to me as like these are some of the best filmed stage show versions are often some of the ones which are different in some way. There's I forget the name of the actress, but there's a Hamlet where Hamlet is a woman that is really big. There is Midsummer Night Dream where they explicitly make Puck and Oberon be they like make out. It's really great. Everyone's dressed like fauns, super hot. A lot of the Shakespeare filmed stage show versions that I see being recommended as like, this is an iconic version, you have to watch this, often they have done something like that. I don't see why you'd go see Shakespeare and not want to listen to like Shakespeare's way of writing. I understand that like the stories of things are interesting, but also like I think that one of the things that is appealing about Shakespeare is how he's written. It'd be very easy to just read Shakespeare aloud and it would be really boring and you don't understand what's happening. And I think that one of the joys of acting is that even if you don't understand all the words that are being told to you, they're delivered in ways that you get it. I don't really know if I've answered the question because I don't really understand what I'm answering.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, like, how would you compare the ease of, like, adaptation of Shakespeare, to bring it back, to Two Little Women?
A trickier thing is that Shakespeare is written to be performed, whereas Little Women was not written to be performed. What makes a good novel is not always something that's easy to adapt onto a visual medium, versus something that is written to be performed is always being written with the idea of it being a visual and audible spectrum that someone goes to see. I think maybe the challenge with Shakespeare is how do you interpret it in a way that hasn't already been done? And I think a lot of ways that people seem to be approaching that now is to do with interesting casting, interesting setting. How could we, you know, we talked about Richard III on this before, like the Ian McKellen one that very visually uses stuff like the visual language of like the Nazi regime to show you very clearly like what Richard is building.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I still don't know if I've answered the question.
Well, like, I always find it when, like, I hear that Shakespeare was written to be, like, the crowd was, like, expected to, like, shout out and to, like, heckle. And, like, I find that horrifying to imagine now.
Yeah, because theatre's become something that you can only go to if you have, like, money to access, versus like getting cheap stand-in seats at the Globe and going and throwing some shit at the stage if you're not having a good time and blah blah, blah. Like,
I can't imagine. So to bring it back to, in the vein of more lewd conversation,
okay,
weird transition, we're going with it.
I don't know where we're going.
And talking about comparing the two versions of Little Women, who would you say is the hottest March sister, Sophie?
Oh, of all of both of the two films?
All eight. Like, you've mentioned that, like, you had a crush on Susan Sarandon, maybe.
No.
Was it Susan Sarandon?
I had a crush on Winona Ryder.
Oh, yeah.
Winona Ryder's Joe was an awakening I didn't realise I was having, but then also Saoirse Ronan's Joe.
Okay. So, just Joe, like you have a crush on Joe.
I've got a type when it comes to women.
And it's Joe.
Not exclusively, but like...
Yes, okay.
I know myself.
Okay. At the end of each episode, we each assign a number of flailings to the thing that we've been discussing. Sophie, how many flailings would you give Little Women?
Probably like a 9.
Okay.
I just think across like all media, mm-hmm. So that's like book, both films, series, all of the adaptations. Like I could talk about it quite a lot.
Someone brings it up like and you're gone.
I came back from seeing the film in the cinema and Mr. S was like, oh, how was it? And I was like, oh, I had to stop myself from openly bawling in the cinema because I went with work colleagues and they can't see me like this. But here's my analytical breakdown of the entire adaptation, despite the fact that you've never seen it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I have to buy the film. I'm going to buy the film. And I have to, because I need to be able to watch it and do all of the crying that I didn't let myself do in the cinema because I didn't want my co-workers to judge me. I need to be able to do that in private.
One of life's greatest problems right now in the world is that the film is not out in time for us to rewatch it for this podcast.
I know, which is actually probably good, because to be honest with you, I feel like I can see every frame of that film in my brain. I can rewatch it now. So yeah, I'm just going to go 9.
Okay. I think that I would give, because like, I feel like I can't rate the book because like I didn't finish it. So that kind of gives my rating on that book. The film, I think I would give just like when that was just like a lot of words in a row.
That's how I feel about the film.
Yeah. When the, but the, you know, but the.
Just inarticulate noises.
Yeah. when you're watching something and you're like, this is such a perfect example of the craft of what this medium can be. Because you're like, the script is great, the acting is great, the shots are great, like everything about this film is fantastic. And it's just such a well-told story that I could flail about the film a lot. I would give the film like an 8.
I actually think the film has rejuvenated my love for the book, because when I reread the book and I found it a little bit overly moralizing, I got a bit disheartened and I was like, oh no, I feel like, I was like, I don't feel like I like this thing that I used to love so much as I used to. And now that I've watched the film, it's all come back to me.
Okay.
I accept it. I accept the things that I don't love so much about the book, but I'm just like, I'm here. I'm back. Hello. I have so many feelings about all of them. I've never had this many feelings about Amy before in my life. I'm still not super interested in Meg, if I'm honest, but I don't mean to shit all over it.
Join the fandom, Sophie. Join the fandom online.
As if I've not already been part of the fandom.
And that's the end of this episode of You Know What I Like. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher and Podbean, and please leave a rating and a review. It helps other people to find the show, and we'd love to be able to flail at more people.
We hope that you've enjoyed listening to us ramble, and please follow the podcast on Twitter at YKWILpodcast or drop us an email at YKWILpodcast@gmail.com.
Come back next month where we get overly excited about Ted Chiang.
See you then!